This is a bonus season of Favorite Librarian, the podcast. As you know, this podcast is available everywhere. So stream, share, and be sure to like and leave me a comment to let me know how you most resonate with this great conversation. Let's get started, friend. And welcome back. This episode is entitled Never Been Played, Played Along. And this week, I'm breaking it up into four sections. The first is heteronormity. The second is expression, sexuality, and identity. The third is friendship, or what is it? And the fourth is inner teenager. I'm really excited to explore this conversation and really share it with you all today, tonight, or wherever you are. But first, let's just get started and do a mental health check-in too. One, I am doing well. My cup has been filled after seeing and just sharing great energy and spaces with family and loved ones and friends, new and old. It has been an experience.
I was gonna go deeper, but I was like, you know what? Let me save that for later on in the podcast.
So first, heteronormity. The reason why I really wanted to discuss this is because, you know, there's three things that really affect not only the queer, but the straight community. And I think it needs to be discussed so that way multiple communities, however you identify, whether straight or queer, are aware of these elements. And I'm interested to know in how you also maneuver and navigate within them. Sexual passability, femme privilege. You know, these are things that I combat myself at my intersection. And, you know, with sexual passability, you know, let me give you an author that has beautifully defined this. You know, E. Patrick Johnson, Audre Lorde, Anita Cornwell, Jennifer Patterson. I recently bought a book from Karis Books and More in Decatur. I was shopping on their birthday. There's a book called Invisible Archives, Queer and Personal Visual Culture in the 1980s. There's Black Skinhead. From Stockton, Beautiful Bottom, Beautiful Shame, which is beautiful, and Sexuality in the Black Church by Douglas. And, you know, in this collection of references that I've mentioned, But in all the references that I mentioned, you know, how they define sexual passability is that one is able to be present comfortably, effortlessly in heterosexual, heteronormal spaces and without being considered, challenged, or asked if they were amongst the LGBTQIA spectrum because of how they are aesthetically presenting, how their physically personality are presenting, their mannerisms, their tones, their references, cultural insight, and also just symmetry. You know, beauty is not only in the eye of the beholder, but as we see, you know, that's metaphorically, and I hope it would be adapted and internalized with everyone, but as we see, a lot of people are able to comprehend beauty through is what we have seen through many rhetorics, whether on social media or in the media or in any genre of literature, whether Victorian or romantic, or whether the Harlem Renaissance, or we're looking at, you know, religious or philosophical work. We see that beauty is a part of symmetry. It's a classic beauty is what many people would define that. And I think that's unfortunate because it restricts other ideas of what beauty can be or look like or should be normalized. And so when sexual passability is especially sexual passability amongst the queer community looks very much like trade or someone on the down low or a queer woman who, like myself, a queer woman that looks very much like a straight woman and can pass in many rooms until I confirm or affirm or assure someone of how I identify. And I think that's a cloak of protection for some, and for others, many people consider it cowardice, because it allows you to have a privilege that not other queer folk are, because of where they are in their journey, transition, or how they affirm themselves. And I completely understand that side, more so lean on that side than anything. However, for many that have sexual passability, it's a cloak of protection because they don't have to identify or share their expression or sexuality. They're able to just simply be present and be accepted until they want to confirm or affirm who they are. You know, let me give you a popular example, which many people think is very controversial. You know, Angela Davis spoke so much in support of not only Black liberation, but that we needed specific laws and protections of Black joy, life, pursuit of happiness, and a list of also human rights for the equality and equity of life for all people of color in the United States and globally. However, during her time when she was in prison and etc., she not once mentioned about her sexuality or her expression when asked about it. You know, many people could, and some scholars have defined it as a deflection. Ooh. I had to take a swig of water. You know, I want to take a swig of this bourbon. Mm-mm-mm. So, back to Angela Davis. Oh, goodness. You know, talking so much tonight, my voice is hoarse. So, I know this is going to have to be like a bonus episode or something. Mm. Oh, Lord, that's refreshing water from the lakes of Minnesota. Shout out to Bobby Boucher. That, gulp of water recharged me, Lord. So, you know, with sexual passability, yes, I needed that water. Oh, Lord. So, with sexual passability, you know, many queer folk, I believe, have more freedom to express themselves now than they ever had. And also, now that we see so many spaces that accept multiple identities and the what many people consider the alphabet mafia, which I love, by the way. I wish I could academically coin that in some way. And then we have femme privilege. You know, femme privilege is something I've done, enjoyed, and try my best not to utilize unless I need to. First, let's define it, and I'll give you an example of how I used it in a good way and used it in a bad way. Femme privilege is much and similar to, first of all, femme privilege is an extension of white patriarchy, but most importantly, patriarchy in general, because it allows a person that is female presenting and has a soft, feminine demeanor and or can be received as such, and they are allowed to not submit or attempt to use as much effort to maintain a bond or relationship, and are mostly receiving. And we'll get into that give and receive around friendship. But when we talk about femme privilege, you know, femme privilege is mostly in the queer community and also around masculine presenting cis straight men, simply because it allows for, again, female presenting people or persons. And I say female presenting persons because that can be trans women, that could be gender nonconforming or trans non-binary cisgendered queer women. It could be intersex folk, because they present, and we all present so differently. But with femme privilege, you're allowed to benefit in ways that other queer folk are not allowed to, or other masculine presenting folk, or amongst different areas of the gender spectrum, do not have. And so, for example,
good way. We'll start with the good and end with the bad before we move into trading down low. A good way I've used femme privilege is like when I'm around, like when I'm hanging out with the majority of my trans friends, or when I'm the only girl amongst my mainly group of gay, black, Asian, and Hispanic men, with a sprinkle of black, with, so a majority of my friend groups are black women and gay black men, Hispanic gay men, and Asian men. That's the majority of my friend group. And white queer folk. That's literally the bulk of my friend group. And when I'm hanging around a lot of my trans folk, or if I'm hanging around a lot of my gay male friends, I'm generally the only woman, let me rephrase that. When I'm with the majority of my gay male friends, I'm the only female presenting person, generally, unless we're in a big group. When I'm hanging out with my trans friends, I'm not the only woman. However, I present specifically as a cisgendered woman, and so when I'm hanging around them publicly and we're getting into like maybe some confrontation or internalized bias or projections from other people, not that I try to overstep, but I try to diffuse and go ahead and try to make sure that my, you know, queer folk, if at possible, don't have to engage that. If I'm like, hey, you know, let me say something real quick. Not that I say that exactly, but I, in my head, before it elevates, I try to figure out, you know, not primarily, but not as a defense mechanism or that I have to save anyone. No, but I, you know, if there's a moment that I need to utilize my film privilege, like there's this one time I was in the movie theater and it was two of my trans friends. We were leaving Alabama and we're just hanging out. And we decided, because we had an extra day, and I was like, oh, let's stop by Macon. We went to Macon and went to the movies, and we kept having people to, like, stare at us. And I was like, uh-oh. And in the back of my head, I'm thinking, this is not the place to go. Long story made short, we go into the movie theater, sit down, and this guy kept walking by. And I realized, okay, I need to not say something to the guy, but to the manager, because my friends were both like, oh. And it was, you know, amongst the first beginnings of them presenting publicly as who they want to affirm for the rest of their lives. And so I knew if they got up and spoke, because at that time they were like a little frightened to get up because the guy kept walking by so much, because we were in the theater and it was just like three other people, but we sat in the back, so we knew that he was like messing with us because he had to come all the way up to the back of the theater the way we sat. And so after I spoke to them, because I slipped out when he like slipped out, because he kept doing it like every 10 minutes. So when I slipped out, I told them they had him removed, and I feel like that was maybe a somewhat part of a femme privilege. Now the bad way I use femme privilege is like when I'm hanging around like my gay male friends and I don't want to do anything and like something needs to be done, I'm like, oh, I'll just sit back and act dumb. I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm like Lois Lane. I'm like, oh my gosh, when is Superman coming? Because I'm definitely Lois Lane here. Not going to do it, baby. Some people are like, Forrest, you can get up and do X, Y, Z. I'm like, not around a bunch of y'all. I'm around a bunch of men. So go ahead and pick up that box and do X, Y, Z. I'm just sit here and give you a hand and clap. You want some water? You want a wet rag? What do you need, babes? I call all my friends babes. I call all my friends babes. I call all my friends love. I call children sweetness. Or I call my goddaughter / niecey ladybug, because she's my little ladybug. And I do that because of the connection I have with them non-romantically. It's strictly platonic, but it's intentional, and it just shows my connection, because I believe that, you know, whatever you call
yourself. I'm going to still use it, but I use those as like just to better connect with someone, because not everyone likes eye contact like myself, and we'll get into that later. But you know, similar to trade and download people. And when I say download people, because it could be anyone amongst the queer spectrum. And a lot of people are like, what's download? Or DL? Like closeted, meaning they haven't come out or publicly affirmed who they are under the queer umbrella or spectrum, or on the spectrum. Queer spectrum. And so, you know, at one point, I know people are like, what the hell is about to be going on? At one point when I was in undergrad, a third of my friends were sex workers, because they, you know, some of my friends that were in college had different occupations. Some were adult gay porn stars, some were exotic night dancers or exotic burlesque dancers, which some people want to call it. And those that were sex workers were all queer. They're either a gay male, trans, or a bisexual woman. And when I just better gain relationships with them, I realize, okay, there's other things I'm not aware of that also affect me, that if I focus on me, better myself to support not only myself, but then other people secondary. Because you got to put the oxygen mask on yourself first before you put it on anyone else. I realized, okay, I need to become more intentional, organized, because how I identify, my expression, my sexuality, but also the privileges that I have, not only as a fair-skinned black woman, but also as a femme-presenting person. And so with sexual passability and femme privilege and a lot of heteronormal, heterosexual spaces, I am able to fluctuate or navigate in ways that some other people of color are not. And for example, a lot of people ask me, you know, Forrest, you're like one of a few people of color. And I'm like, no, that's not true. You know, like there are four African-American people on the board. There are two currently Hispanic people, two Asian persons, and one Hispanic, because our Elaine, she is departing from the board. And then, you know, the diversity of religions and spiritual practices is an array amongst the board. We have a Catholic, a Jew, Buddhist, atheist, agnostic. We have Pentecostal. We have, I think I said Judaism or Jewish. We also have a non-practicing Muslim. So it's like, okay, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's diverse. Catholic, Christian too. So I'm just like, okay, it's very diverse. And when I look at it, it's like, for me, it's equal representation of Atlanta queer. Because what it says is, this is so diverse that you literally have multiple boxes checked off at least once within cultural, religious, and sexual communities. Now, when it comes to gender expression, no. And so when I look at the gender expression, yes, we can improve it. There are areas to improve it. We need more trans. We need more non-binary. That's why I'm hoping my friend, if they're listening, you know who you are, apply. I hope you apply. We need you. But we also need more non-binary. You know, so trans, intersex, non-binary, we need more of that identity on the board. But moving forward, and also I love my board family. Shout out to my Atlanta board family. I love you. And also shout out to my front runners family. I can't thank you all enough, especially DJ, Thomas, Nick, Young, John, all the Johns, Joel, Nicole. But, so, you know, let me say this, wherever you are in your journey, whether you're out, whether you're questioning, whether you're learning about yourself, transitioning, whether you're closeted, your queer experience is valid. And however you walk in that truth and create your own footsteps and whatever impression you want to leave on this earth, I hope that you do it confidently. Let me just say that as a universal message, regardless of whatever space you're in, physically, mentally, know that you are loved, you are good, and you are valid. You know, when I say these three things to myself, you know, especially when I'm down or having those moments where, you know, like that inner voice starts getting to you and starts walking you through certain low frequency, very dark thoughts about, you know, life, I always stare, you know, at something in the room or, you know, touch something that I can move like a fidget spinner, which I started carrying religiously now. But I always say to myself, you are valid, you are good, you are loved. I say it in different ways. You are loved, you are good, you are valid, you are valid, you are loved, you are good. And I hope others are able to really resonate with those three affirmations too. Whether you're in a heteronormative, heterosexual, whether you're in a queer or safe or an unknown space or your comfort zone. Now, moving to part two, expression, sexuality, and identity. You know, these are three different things. Your sexuality, like lesbian, gay, pansexual. These are sexualities. Lesbian, you know. Identities are like trans, intersex. Sexualities are like demisex, asexuality. Identities are like gender non-binary, gender fluid, two-spirit. Expressions are like, identity can also be androgynous. Expression is also androgynous. Femme, which is female, or mass, which is masculine presenting. And then you have the ambiguous, which is like mostly like an up and flow. It's like androgynous, just a little bit more hyper femme, hyper mask. And so when we think about these three things, expression, sexuality, and identity, for myself, I'm definitely, my expression is feminine / I kind of want to say like very casual androgyny. I go from this like hyper feminine to this like casual androgynous. And that's my gender expression. My sexuality is definitely, I've been struggling to think that I'm pansexual because I am a lesbian, but I definitely would say, yeah, I think I would be a little pansexual because, like, I love me a good bear, which is an expression, like a hairy gay man, but they ain't checking for me because, keyword, gay man, gay. So they ain't looking for no, you know, cootie cat. And so when we talk about the spectrum, it's fluid, just like expression and sexuality and identity. And, you know, when I look at my friend group, you know, when I look at it on a pie chart, yeah, it would be 4/4 equally. Black women, gay men of color. The third would be trans and queer white folk. And then the third would be straight allies. Yeah. Straight black and brown allies with a sprinkle of white. That would be my friend group. And when I look at the spectrum of gender and identity and sexuality and expression, I see things where I'm like, okay, there's a pattern here. Do I have a pattern of how I develop friendships? Subconsciously, yes. Consciously, I try to be as intentional to diversify my group, but also, you know, my group is not that big. When I say group, I mean my group of friends. You know, I have about 8 people that I talk to, communicate, check in with in some sort of various way every week, whether it's through close friends or texting or sending each other memes. That's how we connect. And it's 8. And in my close friends, it's gone from 13 to now 29. And that's because I've opened my circle to certain people. Like, what's on my close friends is just the surface of what I tell these 8 people that I speak to. And these 8 people are primarily trans and gay men and Black women. These 8 people. And so when I look at the spectrum of what I have around me, it's like, it's literally like my own Congress, my own, you know, my 8 best friends. Yeah. My 8 best friends are like Congress to me. And my close friends, which are like a reflection of my Instagram close friends, are 29. And those are like my House of Representatives in Congress. And they let me know, like, you know, they check in with me, they hold me accountable, and I hold them accountable. Or I'm like, hey, you posted this like crazy shit the other day. I know I haven't spoken to you in about like 2-3 weeks, but like, what's up with this bullshit? You know what I'm saying? Or I'm like, hey babe, I see you posted this. I just want to check in with you. Or I won't even bring it up like that, depending on how close we are. Or I'll be like, hey, just checking in after something that they've posted where I'm like, okay, that's a little alarming. That's different from you. I don't know if that's a cry for help or like, hey, let me check in. And generally, depending on how they receive me, I'm like, okay, I can check in on them again in like another week or possibly in a few days. That's because of the openness I have in my life. And we're going to talk about more about that. But reason why I say that is because in the portion of why, and the purpose of why this episode is entitled Never Been Played Along is because, you know, after I have done some serious reading, and I mean serious, you know, I was reading this book entitled Power, The Rise of Black Women in America, How Black Women Embody the American Dream, Defy Oppression, and Win. It's by Charity C. Elder. It's a beautiful title. Not only reading that, but when I also read Reclaiming Two Spirits, Sexuality, Spiritual Renewal, and Sovereignty in Native America by George D. Smithers, those two books really changed me, only because it helped me to understand, like, whoa, oh, hold on. And let me also mention a third one. The third book would have to be Setting Boundaries, Finding Peace. It's a guide for, like, reclaiming yourself. It's by Nedra Glover Tawaba. I think I pronounced her name right. Yeah. Setting Boundaries, Finding Peace by Nedra Glover T. That way I don't mess up her and their name. I'm not going to lie. Those three books kind of whooped my ass, especially the workbook of setting boundaries or holding boundaries. Only because it let me know, like, okay, I've left myself open to not only to be used, not in ways where I'm not aware, but in ways where I've not established a no, or I let my no's be no's, or self-govern myself to be aware and open to things unbeknownst to my understanding or previous experiences. Y'all are probably gonna get used to me saying letting y'all know I just took a shot. Well, it was a half a shot, but now I'll finish it. Woo! The reason why I mention this is because, you know, I've dated many variations of a woman, that's how we'll put it, whether they be cisgendered, a trans woman, whether they be feminine presenting non-binary, whether they be trans non-binary but they present mostly femme, whether they've been gender fluid and presented mostly femme. A majority of my partners, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to hit the mic. A majority of my partners are, yeah, a majority of my partners are androgynous, female presenting, or trans identifying, gender fluid. So for me, I'm constantly educating myself to make sure that I'm able to hold a safe space, not only for my romantic partners, but my friends, my family, myself, but that I'm doing the work to better understand myself and to apply what I know through my actions, not through my words. You know, I'm not here to share verbally every freaking, you know, book that I've read and how I'm applying it outside of this podcast, because that can be draining to someone that just wants to have a regular conversation with you about the freaking weather or why this, you know, why watching Zeus Network is maybe one of the most toxic things you can do. Oh, that will hurt my little feelings. But we can't even have conversations like that because you're committed or believe or have this idea of me that is helping you navigate your actual experiences with me. But it is a disillusion to the person around or in front of you or who you're engaging. And so until you release that idea, you're not truly able to see me. You know, I have, you know, when I first came to Atlanta, a lot of people befriended me because, believe it or not, I'm an introvert. Around, you know, anyone outside of my Congress or a library, inside anyone outside of my Congress of House Representative, my 8 friends, Congress, or the 29 people my House of Congress or my House of Representative, if it's not them, I'm generally shy or just to myself, you know. I'm like, oh, hey, how you doing? Let me know I can help you, babe. Good to see you. And then I just do my own thing. I'm quiet. And I talk to my people. But when I'm around my people, I'm, hey, babe. Oh, my gosh. Girl, let me tell you. I'm like, babe, let me tell you, you look so good. Them thighs and them short. Like, that's me. But I can't get there with some people because they're not open to see different variations of expression, sexuality, or a person's identity aside from what they believe, know, or have experienced. And so that's where I'm kind of like, okay, what do I need to do? You know? Those are the questions Those are the questions I ask myself. What do I need to do for myself? Because, you know, moving into our third phase, friendship, you know, friendship for me is non-romantic, is platonic, and it's intentional. And it's also consistent. You know, for me, once you're my friend, I'm constantly checking in on you. So that way, whether I'm looking at your close friends or whether I'm looking at what you post and liking it and commenting on that, I'm checking in. So that way we don't have to talk. I just know what's going on by looking at your life and vice versa. So that way when you invite me out or we do something, I can just reference something I've seen. Like, oh, how did this go? Or I saw you did this and I comment. Like, yeah, girl, because that mean you sent me. I sent the old dude like you said. I'm like, oh, my God, see? Or I'm like, girl, you were right. I'm like, babes, you were right. I shouldn't do X, Y, and Z. And now look at me and they're like, see, I told you. I'm like, you were right. Stuff like that. But the reason why I say friendship is non-romantic, is platonic, and it's intentional, and it's constant is because, one, non-romantic meaning I don't want you in any sexual, physical way, nor am I going to engage any romantic or sexual tension. There's not that itch that needs to be scratched there. And not that I'm asexual or demisexual, but I'm not here for you to feel as though I'm only getting to know you or you're only getting to know me because you want to have sex with me, or you want to eventually get into a date with me. That is called playing the long game. And it's not really fair because it disarms someone from getting to know you in a way that's organic, because someone has a, you know, a subliminal agenda of wanting to get closer in a way that's not organic or effortless and subconscious through their efforts of just generally wanting to get to know them. And so when I first went to Atlanta, I did have some friends that wanted to get to know me just simply because of where I worked, or me, you know, working, or where I worked, or what I was doing, or the friends that I had. And I realized, oh, once I start changing my friend group, like start not hanging out with certain people, I realized, oh, I'm actually freeing my life of certain weight I didn't know I was carrying, because I thought I had to maintain something that was an extension of me, but it, and how I saw myself, but this is how I see myself currently. And I'm worth more than the trouble I'm going through if I'm also trying to spread peace and love and joy. But peace, love, and joy comes from within. You don't find it in the world, you share with the world. So once I started, you know, distancing myself from certain people and focusing on myself, I finished my master's. I realized, okay, I was like, friendship is non-romantic. It's platonic. There's no sexual tension or connection, frustration there. Mm-mm. It's also, when I say intentional, I mean like, once you're my friend, I consider you like my brother or sister. Because I don't have, you know, I only have one brother, and we're estranged. And we've been estranged for years. I haven't seen him in going on a year and some change now. Really, two. And it'll probably be for the rest of my life knowing Jacob. You know, he's done so much to avoid me during holidays before, where there have been times where I haven't seen him in longer than a year, where I haven't spoken to my brother in longer than 2 years. Well, actually, longer than that for both. It was going on like 3 years I hadn't seen or spoken to him. And so, yeah, 3 years. That was the longest time. So the time that this has happened for like the third time, yeah, I can tell this is like one and done for him and I. So that's why with my friends, it's very intentional. I treat them like they are literally my brothers and sisters. I would go to bat for them like they were my brothers and sisters. And so for my exes, you know, the same thing. I would never talk ill about them unless I'm like venting to one of my, you know, 8 best friends. But in those spaces with those 8 people, I know it's a safe space where they understand I'm not bashing, you know, my ex in any way, where I'm literally just getting things out that I haven't been able to say in order to heal and not use it in any sort of negative way against me. And they also know, and I also understand within myself, I'm not even going to use some of the words that I've said finally out loud against them, because I've been able to get it out and not have it rummish or bloom or fester it within my mind. I got it out. I got it up and I got it out, and I'm over and done with it. And so that's why, you know, when I consider love languages of friendship, I think they're very different. And I have 5 categories of what I believe friendship love languages are. And this is based on my experiences. And so you might want to take a pencil or write this down, or if you're listening anywhere, you might want to get your phone out and get your notes out. I'll talk a little slower. But favorite librarians, friendship love languages are communication, touch, give, receive, and affirm. And I'm going to define them. When it comes to communication, that means frequency of checking in, of verbally communicating, of illustrating through words, interests, wants, or needs to connect or bond or strengthen either said. It is solely verbal or in some sort of communal way, whether it be ASL as well, or whether it be sending memes, or as I mentioned previously, checking in via close friends and commenting constantly or in private or in the DMs. Touch, for me, some people are like, no, touch is a no-no in romantic platonic friendships. But for myself, touch is important to me because I grew up in an environment where holding hands, hugging, cuddling with my grandparents, cuddling with my aunts and uncles on the couch was a normal thing. It would be cousins sitting there on the couch with our aunts and uncles all bundled up, and we'll be watching movies, sitting there eating snacks, cutting up. That was love to me, and so I want to continue that, and I believe that I have. And so with my friends, it's normal for me to be hugged up on them. Like I said, when I'm out with like a one of my gay men of color friends, and it's like the two of us and I'm hugged up on them or close, you would never believe how much people will walk by us and be like, such a beautiful couple. And we'll be laughing like, oh girl, yes, all three of us. Like, we'll just like amp it up, you know? It's so hilarious. And because of I also hold my friends' hands. Like, I don't mind holding my hands because we all get at some points touch deprived. Now, keep in mind, 60% of my friends are single. 40% of my friends are married. I do not hold my married friends' hands. Well, I said that backwards. I do not hold my married friends' hands. Unless there's an understanding that I know of and we all know of. But I only hold my single friend's hand. 60% of my friends are single. 40% of my friends are definitely in a marriage. Now, I'm not sure what kind of marriage, whether platonic, monogamous, polyamorous, poly, whatever. I'm not sure, but that ain't none of my business. I'm on the business that pays me. And moving on, when it comes to give or receive, many of us are givers or receivers. And for myself, I'm definitely a giver. I'm learning to become a receiver in certain ways because that's my natural state. But through certain experiences and grooming experiences, I've definitely become a giver. And a giver is someone that is used to checking in a lot of ways, doing and what many people define as acts of service or what is quality time. And that's me. If you need my time, I will give you my quality, undivided attention. If you need any support, hey, I'm here to do it through the understanding and best of my abilities and what I have left after I give myself 100%. However, there are ways that I definitely am 100% a receiver. Like when it comes to checking in, I am not the best. I'm generally the person that is on the receiving end. I am not going to initiate text communication. That is very rare for me. So a lot of people feel like, you know, I haven't spoken to you in a year. I'm like, dude, we talk on close friends and I'm always in your DMs talking to you, you talking to me. They're like, yeah, but it's different from when like I can call you. And I'm like, I understand. And I'm like, why don't you call? And they're like, the last three times I called you, I was the one that called you. So when I stopped, we didn't talk. And I'm like, I understand. You know, that's been like that's been twice that's happened to me with the guy and with the girl. Strictly platonic, strictly non-romantic. And we've been able to reconnect. Shout out to my boos. You know who you are listening. Thank you for being a great friend. But the distance and disconnection was only a few weeks, no longer than a month for both. Well, no, let me stop lying. Three for the guy, because he was like, Forrest, this I ain't heard a thing from you. So that's when I was like, okay, let me figure out a way we can communicate where it's not overwhelming or where I'm like, damn. And so that comes with time, that comes with effort, but that also comes with what is last, affirming, how you affirm someone. And I believe affirm is about respect, not only respectability politics, but the politics that on the jurisdiction of life that you live in. For example,
All queer identities are valid, beautiful, and welcomed around me. They're within my life, love life, my family, shit, myself, and the intersection that I'm at. And if anyone is femphobic, transphobic, homophobic, xenophobic, forestphobic, they can't be in my friend group or my friend circle or near my friends. And if I'm around them or if I know they're coming or something, I'm going to give my friend a heads up like, hey, such and such is coming. I've had these multiple experiences with them. You can be open to have your own experience, but I'm just letting you know why I won't be around them. Now, you can do whatever you want to, but I'm just laying it out here for you to know. And based upon my report, I can not expect but have an understanding of where that information might go with them and what they might do with it and the decision. Not that I'm 100% sure, but based upon our rapport, especially if they are A, like I mentioned before, in my Congress, which is 9 people, really 8, or if they're in my House of Representatives, which is 29 of my close friends. And I consult a lot of these people. And so when you affirm someone, that you literally are just saying, hey, I respect you. This is the space I hold for you. This is the space I protect for you to be you. And if need be, you don't even have to worry about not what side I'm going to choose. You just have to let me know when you want to pull me off of whatever situation. I done jump monkey. I done jump knee deep and monkey stomp somebody in, you know, let me know. Cause once I go to war, oh man, we're not over here winning battles. We winning the war. So it's on. It's on like the Korean conflict. You don't even, like, we still don't even have an end date for that. We just gonna keep going and going. You don't even know you in the war with me yet. You just know you can't even come over here, cross the border. You know what I'm saying? It's literally like that. I have certain frenemies where it's like, listen, it's up and it's stuck. This is like the Korean War. Not the Korean War, the Korean conflict. So let me know what you want to do, baby. Because you definitely can't come over here. If you North Korea, I obviously am the United States. Which leads me into my last portion, number 4, which I probably will be quick about. Your inner teenager. A lot of people are really focused on their inner child, but it's your inner teenager that you also need to focus on, because there's this hyper independence and overconfidence, but also the ego. This ego is the voice that speaks to you, and it lets and fuels this overconfidence many of us have had, especially if I'm speaking from experience or possibly just telling you about my own. It fuels this overconfidence that has accumulated from being hyper independent, and through that hyper independence of always having to depend on yourself, be assured, be confident, be consistent, be dependable, be self-efficient, be successful. If you're not successful, you're going to fail. Without these things, it would be significantly hard. And so this inner teenager is where you have these inner dialogues of ego versus moral connection or anxiety for myself, or basically ego versus self. Ego versus self, ego versus anxiety, ego versus moral. And I want to say conviction, because when we deal with the ego, it's the voice that not only is self-sabotaging, but it's the voice that fuels us in ways where we have clouded or ballooned certain beliefs that we have now become fixated on an effort or action that we believe must be taken, whether through self or through someone else, for peace or joy or reckoning or resolution. You know, for example, I had gotten out of a domestic violence situation, and I'd gotten into a relationship afterwards with my recent partner. And when they broke up with me, they had gone on a tour basically stating how I was emotionally abusive and had threatened them. And this is coming from someone that is 1.5 feet taller than me. And I believe, I hope that I possibly weigh maybe 8 to 10 pounds more or less than them, more or less. And because they're an athlete, but some of the claims that they were making, I was like, oh,
they're committed to an idea, but also they're falsely accusing someone, myself, of something that I'm not capable of doing. And even with evidence that you reached out, even with the little evidence that you believe you accumulated, it wasn't justified because it was something that you had mostly exaggerated. And I felt bad because I thought, oh, wow, this person is trying to hurt me. But not only is this person trying to hurt me, but they're trying to, this defamation is just crazy because, you know, the screenshots that you provide and the things that you accuse me of, when looked at by peers, they see no claim of abuse or torment or where you've been mistreated. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, wow, this person literally tried to hurt me because of the ego that is speaking to them. What is telling them, hey, this person hurt you because it didn't go the way you wanted, or whatever it may be. I think it's odd because in my last relationship with Sporty Spice, what we, you know, beautifully named her, she is, I believe, being led by her ego in certain things. And to also, you know, I'm still healing from that. Not only healing from that, but I've taken the steps, not only being constantly in therapy, I go to therapy once a week, but not only have I been in therapy, not only before and after that relationship, but not only am I ready to date someone else, yes, have I been dating? I've been on some dates, I'm not gonna lie, with different people, but nothing consistent. Nothing promising. But do I want something back with Sporty Spice? No. Not after she intentionally tried to defame my character and use our private conversation against me in a way that, after reviewed amongst peers, it didn't work. You know, at one point I was like, do I need to send a cease and desist through my lawyer? Do I need to file for a temporary restraining order? Like, I literally thought about it because I was like, hey, this woman is writing whole letters and emails, providing screenshots of entire conversations in an effort to prove something that has yet to be justified by multiple people, is committed to trying to hurt me. So at this point, not only do I still love them, which aches, because my ego was like telling me, you know, Forrest, you know, you're so stupid for loving this person. You didn't even have a chance to even tell them you loved them before they broke up with you and made claims. So, excuse me. So the ego talks to us all differently. But then we have our ego that's versus self and versus anxiety. And for myself, what helps me to combat that is openness. But openness is different from carelessness. A lot of people confuse that. Carelessness is effortless, and I don't want to say moralless, but careless is effortless. It's unintentional. It's not being considerate. The details don't matter. Openness is planned, strategic. It's receptive. It's easy to say sorry for. It's easy to hold accountable, easy to be accountable. And so one way with my inner teenager is that, especially with that voice of the ego speaking so much, and I don't want it again to fuel my hyper independence or overconfidence, is I lean on my community. I ask for help within my Congress, my 8 people of my friend group. And remember, Congress is for the 8 group of people that I consider are people that help me vote on life decisions. Not saying I can't make them myself, but these 8 people, they help me to make life's decisions. And we speak routinely every week, every other day. My 29 close friends, we speak once a month or twice a month. And they don't help me to make life decisions, but they help to make life fun. They make life worth living outside of my own intentional purposes and efforts. And so with my inner teenager, I ask for help. I'm like, hey, I'm not feeling good. Or I'm like, hey, can we go out tonight. I really need to get out the house. I've been in my head for the past 2 weeks. Or if someone's like, hey, Forrest, I have a concert. Do you want to go with me? Or I'm like, yeah, I would love to. But before we go, I'm totally going to be down. But if I have a little moment or so, it's because I'm still healing from X, Y, and Z. Or this happened to me a week or two or a month ago, and I'm still processing it. They'll be like, cool, say less. When you get into that, what do you want me to do? Or I'll either be like, hey, if you see me getting like that, can you please just like pat me on the back or just like rub my back in a circle or two, like, you know, every like 30 minutes or so. Not that you have to babysit me, but like if you see me going down like that rabbit hole, like just pat me on the back, you know, help me to ground myself. And that means all the world, because again, it's going back to that friendship. It's going back to safe spaces. And so, you know, even speaking about my previous ex, some of the things I discussed with them, you know, I'm realizing other people are beginning to become aware of like how I identify. And not that I think that my ex has told many, many people. I think they may have told maybe a few more people. And I'm okay with that. But I do, you know, kind of want to let certain things go because, you know, never been played. I played along. So at first when I thought I got played by my ex, it used to hurt. And then I realized I played along for a minute because I was aware. But I could have got out, but it was so easy to just be in something that was consistent and convenient out of desperation. And to know that you would choose someone or be in a situation or choose something over and over again, knowing it's not good for you, is desperate. It's also, it lacks the emotional and mental work that is needed for self in order for yourself to grow. And so when you are able to realize, okay, I can do this on my own. I can do certain things without help. Okay, I need help with certain things. Hey, I need more help. Or hey, I need to take a step back to see, can I do this without help now? That is where we show growth. So with this week's episode, Never Been Played, Played Along, we broke it up into four sections. The first, heteronormity. The second, expression, sexuality, and identity. And the third, collective, friendship, and friendship, whatever that is. And lastly, but not least, inner teenager. This has literally been so fun and brilliantly entertaining, I hope. Been better on my cursing, but, you know, who knows? You know, the books that I mentioned tonight, you can definitely check them out on my Instagram or on my highlights of my Instagram at Favorite Librarian. Please be sure to share and comment and like. My podcast is available everywhere. Please, it really is important and it supports this playlist and information. Also, if you have Apple Music and you want a great curated playlist, ask your Siri to play you Favorite Librarian, the playlist on Shuffle. It is brilliant. From there, be sure to check out my public curated playlist at Apple Music under Favorite Librarian. Share and like, subscribe, check out favoritelibrarian.com. But more importantly, continue reading, continue loving yourself, and more importantly, become more attached to your joy. You can't get away from me that fast. Be sure to share, like, comment, stream Favorite Librarian, the podcast, anywhere a podcast can be heard. Amazon, Spotify, Google Playlists, everywhere. Also, did you know Favorite Librarian also has curated playlists on Apple Music? Just check out Favorite Librarian. It is a beautiful circulation and curated great collection of vibes that are also paired with certain titles, but just also certain emotions and great titles. In the meantime, continue reading, and for more information, check out Favorite Librarian on Instagram or www.favoritelibrarian.com.